You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on the couch with Dr. Michelle. That's me here every Friday, 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time. On the country's most listened to internet talk station, LA Talk Radio. Welcome. Another fabulous show. Let me ask you some questions, folks. How many times have you felt self-doubt, depression, anxiety? Can't figure out why, huh? How often do you wonder why many of your relationships don't work out? And I'm not only talking about romantic relationships, but also I'm talking about issues with friends or even coworkers. And have you thought to yourself, or have people close to you said, you know, maybe you should get some therapy for that? And I'm talking to men and women right now. You know, go to some therapy. Figure out why you feel the way you do. Well, today you're going to get some great insight about yourself and understand why you might feel the way you do and how to feel better about who you are and where you're going in your life. My guest today is James Krehbiel. We're talking about his latest book, Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth. Hey, James, nice to have you on the show.
Dr. Michelle, thank you so much. It's just great to be with you.
Well, I was really blown away. Your book is terrific, as I told you earlier. I put it up there with the intelligence yet simplicity of Alice Miller's Drama of the Gifted Child. And that's all. That is the classic, really. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, that's elevating it quite a bit there. But I thank you very much for putting me in that same class.
Well, it's easy to read. However, really makes the reader think. It also has parts in it where you can journal and write and think and do exercises, which I think a lot of people need while they're reading a book to help themselves. You know.
Well, that was an important part of the work was
right.
To get some reader helps in there, so people could actually, you know, work a process as they read the work and
right.
And reflect on the things and the concepts that I shared.
Right. Obviously, the title, Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth, you know, basically it's about the impact of your troubled childhood on our adult functioning. I mean, isn't that what it's all about in therapy usually, right, James?
Yes, but a lot of times people don't get that. They come to me and you know, they feel stuck as adults, and they've kept recreating some of the same worn-out, you know, patterns of thinking and behavior, and they go, you know, what's up? You know, I feel miserable. My relationships aren't working. And like you said, it doesn't have to be necessarily an intimate relationship, or it can just be, you know, friendships or acquaintances, but they can't seem to quite get it right. And as I counsel many people like that and talk to them, I realized that there were these core assumptions, these issues related to their history of childhood dysfunction that many times were affecting their ability to move forward.
Is this what prompted you to write your book because of all these clients who you started seeing, or was there something also within you?
Yes, there was something within me. I had gone through a lot of pain in my own childhood. And struggled with that. So it was written from not only a personal perspective, but a professional perspective.
Sure.
And I went through my own process of trying to heal from the dysfunction of childhood. And so I had a kind of a roadmap, if you will, for how this process should go. And I began to kind of try it out and work with my therapy. And I found, boy, you know, this was resonating with people as they, and even people who looked at my book would say, did you have some problems in your childhood?
Uh-oh.
Because I don't know how anybody could write this.
Yes.
You know, and not have some affected. So it was all good. And
sure.
That was good. And I don't mind talking about it.
Well, sure. And most authors and therapists become that because they do have trouble. Childhoods. They have issues they need to work out and don't understand why they're still having problems with relationships or feeling depressed or have low self-esteem, and that's why we become what we become, don't we?
Exactly, and I like your title, On the Couch.
There you go.
Because I don't feel that therapists are going to be very effective. This is just my bias.
Sure.
Unless they've been on the couch, because it's important to learn things that maybe ways in which we filter reality that affect our counseling process. And by the way, many, many of my patients come to me after they've exhausted other counseling resources. And sometimes the stories they tell me about what they've experienced therapeutically is not a real hopeful and
right.
effective message.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I think your book contains many different kinds of orientations. And that being said, I'm talking about the psychodynamic, you know, the psychosocial issues we grew up with, internalizing all Adlerian concepts, everything. It internalizes everything because, as you know, not one type of therapy can really do it. You need to be eclectic and have the cognitive behavioral aspect and let's go in the past and let's see what you kind of shove down and all that stuff. So that's why I really enjoyed your book as well.
Well, that's a really interesting point because I really, as much as I do in terms of cognitive therapy, people would tease me when I was going through my postgraduate practicum because
right.
I would do a lot of experiential techniques that were more like gestalt-type
right.
things. And I'd say, hey, you know, this fits in. And then later on, I picked up a book by a guy named Jeffrey Young out of Philadelphia, and this
yeah.
is what he was doing.
Yes.
He was doing a lot of what's called schema-focused therapy, and then he was doing a lot of experiential techniques with people, a lot of meditation and so forth. And I do a lot of that because I think it's very effective.
Yes, it is effective. I can tell you that right now. Let's jump into what you talk about in your book about the magical illusion of childhood that many of us carry into adulthood. What is that magical illusion we have?
I think that's a pivotal concept for my work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the notion that somehow people will cling to their troubled parents, believing that somehow they're going to morph and they're going to become these loving, nurturing adults that they've always yearned for. And in response to the lack of availability of parents, kids will perform to please, and they'll do this, of course, in order to try to gain the validation and love of their parents. And when it's not forthcoming, I feel that the kids will turn their anger on themselves.
Right.
They begin to make assumptions that they're defective. And this way they can let their parents off the hook. They can minimize the pain of the past. That's what I see in therapy. I see adults coming to me trying to minimize the pain of the past, letting their parents off the hook, and I'll share some various ways in which clients do that.
Great.
But the notion is still clinging to this ideal notion about the way in which they want their parents to be.
Yes.
And they will still, adults will still yearn for that
right.
and talk to me about that. In my notion is to try to help them understand that illusion is an illusion. It'll never be a reality.
Right. And by the way, folks, if you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, James Krehbiel. He's written a book that is one of the best I've ever read regarding troubled childhood trying to work through problems. And as an adult, you just don't understand why you're having problems in life or why you're depressed or anxious or having relationship issues. The book's entitled Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth. I invite you to call in if you have a question or comment. Please call us, 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815, Los Angeles number here, and we'll be happy to take your call and try to help you out if you have any questions about your childhood or your problems you're experiencing now in your adulthood and trying to work through things. So let's jump into some of the negative interpretations, James, that adults internalize during childhood. So you talk about, you know, if we're to mature into fully functioning adults, you say we must face the inner demons of our past. So what do we interpret negatively?
Well, some of the interpretations, there's these, what I call unwritten rules that govern a dysfunctional family. And these assumptions are caught rather than taught. And some of them are, for example, I must avoid conflict at all costs. We may have had a parent that was over-functioning, that, you know, was living through us, or we may have had a parent that just was absent emotionally.
Right.
And so we learn to avoid conflict. And that then gets activated in adulthood in so many different ways in terms of relationships. And I find that there's this notion about being courageous and being brave at all times, never showing any emotion. In other words, I must appear strong at all times. These are interpretations. And particularly we know with men that that, you know, governs their behavior based upon a lot of cultural factors.
Right.
People will say, these are things I ferret out. These are things that I pick out as people tell me their stories. Mm-hmm. For example, every time I try to get close to people, someone stabs me in the back.
Yes.
So there's this high degree of mistrust that they have with their caretakers during the time they're growing up or with relatives or other family members. If I try to please my parents, they won't get it. They won't affirm my worth.
Right.
So many people that come to me and tell me stories about how they would do well in school and get good grades and never were validated by their parents.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't watch myself, I could get hurt. I must perform admirably at all times. People come to me and they're so burdened down because they feel they must do well at all times, and they were under this umbrella of their parents constantly criticizing them or constantly guilting them for not doing better than they were doing. Enough was never enough.
Right. And I know you, through your therapy, try to point out that it's not, of course, their fault. It's not the child's fault. You're not responsible for your parents or parent or whoever raised you to be narcissistic or neglecting or worrisome about their own life. And they, of course, usually have not resolved their own issues, and therefore they project all that onto you, the children. And I'm sure that's where you come from, and try to go there and then work through the process, correct, of trying to heal them from that.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I think I knew I was kind of onto something when I would meet with patients and they would tell me their story. And all of a sudden, when they got at a certain point, I'd say, you know, you did the best you could. These were your coping strategies. You needed to have them.
Right.
But it wasn't your fault. And when I would tell them that, I could see it was resonating. And many people would cry, or they'd get anguish looked on their face, or they'd get frozen.
Exactly.
And that, just that thought, it never was your fault. It never was about you, would resonate with people because they never understood, because of the magical illusion, that it wasn't about them.
Right.
They always felt like, you know, they had done something wrong. And this is why, you know, things ended up the way they did. But it was based upon these childhood interpretations that they interpreted it as somehow it was their fault and they were defective.
Sure. Now, I, as well as you, see some adults from troubled childhoods, and they they actually live productive lives, and they're doing quite well. They're functioning well, and they're out there in the world. Why are some people able to overcome their childhood that was troublesome, and others can't get past that?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the people who are able to overcome and move forward, they appropriately process the past, meaning that they're able to recognize it, they're able to grieve it, they're able to release it, they're able to begin to let go of it, they're be able to rationally respond by reframing things in terms of different types of assumptions, and I'll go into that a little bit. So the processing, and so it's a sifting and sorting of saying, okay, gosh, you know, what were some things about my parents that didn't work? What were some things about my childhood that did work? And being able to differentiate those things that worked and didn't work instead of just being swallowed up by the whole of what their childhood was like.
Right.
And that's the problem. Those who don't process the past and move on get swallowed up by their past. And they either feel victimized by it, or they try to dismiss it. And I have a lot of clients, and I'm sure you do too, that want to dismiss their painful past.
Yes.
And that's understandable. But they'll do that through mechanisms like just intellectualizing,
right.
Obsessing, just addictive kinds of behaviors, or just minimizing painful experiences.
Right.
What I want people to do is to experience the full emotional impact of what happened to them and then begin a process of releasing it. And most people, or the ones who haven't moved on, have never really taken a clear emotional look at what they experienced.
Yes. How do you suggest, and I know there are many wonderful therapeutic suggestions and things that you suggest people work through in your book, but what are some of the main things you suggest that people do to experience the emotional impact that they suffered?
Well, what I want people to do, once in therapy we are able to kind of get that stirred up a little bit and get that moving for them, is to begin to do some journaling work. And then sometimes I'll have people that I want them to actually write a letter to their parent that they do not deliver, where they begin to express their feelings about what happened to them and how they perceived it. And a lot of times people have trouble with this because they feel like, I'm going to hurt my parents by doing this. And this is the most common thing. I can't tell you about my parents because it'd be too hurtful. And so I tell them to always, if they're going to write a letter, to say, I love you, Mom, or I love you, Dad, but, and then begin to share some of the painful aspects. And I tell people, look, if you actually get in touch with the downside of what you experienced as a youngster, it'll actually improve your relationship with your parents in the here and now, if they're alive, and it will actually help you to get closure with your parents if they are not alive.
Right.
I had an adult yesterday, and he told me a story. He was sitting on a rock, and his father put him on the rock because they would go fishing. And his father gave him a bunch of commands about what he wanted him to do. And as I was talking to him, I recognized he was in a great deal of pain.
Yes.
I said, what's going on for you? And he said, I hated my father. I was so angry at him.
Wow.
I never wanted to do this, and I didn't want to be sitting on a rock, and I wanted to get off the rock. And my father had me sitting there, and he wanted me to fish, and I didn't want to do any of it.
Yes.
And this was sort of a metaphor, and I look for these kinds of images and metaphors. And I said, I want you to go to work on that. I want you to go home. This is your homework assignment. I want you to write about being on that rock and what that was like for you and what you experienced sitting there in terms of your feelings about that and your feelings about your father.
Yes. That's terrific to be able to write and create those feelings, because it seems a little safer, doesn't it? To write down
yes.
some of those feelings.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
So once he writes down those, excuse me for interrupting, I'm sorry, James. Once he writes down those feelings, then what's the next process?
Okay, what I want to do is picture this. Like, he has all of this baggage in his left hand, and he's holding out his hand, and he has all of this clutter. I call it a complex of feelings. A therapist friend of mine calls it the phenomenological objective dictate. It's just this stuff.
Yes.
And you can objectify it, but it's emotional. So he has all this stuff over in the left hand. And I said, we got to get you over to your right hand. Hold your right hand out. What's over here in your right hand? And he says, well, what I want is serenity. I want peace. I want to feel authentic.
Yeah.
I want to feel good in my own skin. I say, okay, we're gonna get in a process here. We're going to move you. We're going to let go and teach you how to let go of this junk, all this stuff that you experienced as you were sitting on that rock, and we're going to move it. And so the process is, how do we do that? I have people do, you know, a meditation. I have them do writing. The writing actually helps people to flush stuff out, and it decreases the intensity of their emotional experience, so it no longer has hold over them.
Yes.
I call that not having power over your past, that you begin to be able to reclaim your power because you've let go of the junk.
Yeah, that is some great stuff to help people. And by the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and my special guest today is author, he's an educator, licensed professional counselor, nationally certified cognitive behavioral therapist, James Krabiel. His latest book, and I say latest, we'll talk about his other book at the end of the show as well, how you can get a hold of that. The book now is Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth. It's about the impact of troubled childhoods on our functioning as adults, basically. What are we carrying? The baggage, James, you just talked about, possibly. If you'd like to call in 323-203-0815, I'd love to hear from you. Or James would love to chat as well, maybe give you some suggestions on how to help yourself. But we will be talking about how to get a hold of this book as well, because I think you'll want to. It's very clear to read, extremely helpful, covers a lot of different orientations to really dig deep and get rid of this stuff that you've been carrying along so long in your life. So we talk about some of the characteristics that adults demonstrate, you know, that show the long-term effect of inadequate parenting. Yeah, you just talked about one of your clients. He was
yes.
really heavy. He just wanted to be peaceful. What are some of the other characteristics that adults demonstrate?
They perform to please. That's one of the, it's huge.
Yes.
You had mentioned at the beginning of the show the issues of self-doubt and lack of confidence.
Yeah.
I find that people have a tremendous problem with emotional disclosure. That's obvious that, you know, I mean, based upon their experience, why that would be true.
Sure.
There's a lack of assertiveness, not setting clear boundaries, passive-aggressive behavior, fears of intimacy, addictive behaviors,
right,
avoidance of conflict. All of these are things that I find out and articulate to the patient
yes.
based upon their narrative, their childhood narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And then I begin to work on, okay, as we start to close the book on closing, as we close the book on the experience of grieving their childhood, then I begin to say, all right, these are the things that get activated. Now we can begin to reframe them. Mm-hmm. And we can find ways to help you to become more assertive, to be more confident, to set better boundaries.
Right.
And so that's the direction that I go.
Mm-hmm. It is sort of a process. You do have to go in steps to first sort of work through and identify some of the problems that you're having. And that's what you do. And that's what we hopefully do as therapists to help people move on. And, you know, you talk also about denial, of course. We shove things down and we operate in certain ways in order to function. It's survival, basically. But isn't denial sometimes helpful in surviving as a child?
Denial is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
For many of us. Yes. It's necessary. If we're grieving the loss of a loved one, a certain period of denial is actually helpful to keep us mobilized until we can begin to grieve, particularly for children and childhood. This is the way we survive.
Right.
This is our safety zone. We survive by doing all the things that we need to do, by erecting a bunch of coping strategies that work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that involves avoidance, freezing, acting out in response to parental behaviors, all of these things are necessary survival skills.
Sure.
That serve a purpose, and they serve us well.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is they don't work very well in our closest relationships in adulthood.
Right.
That's where it begins to break down. When people see me, something's amiss in terms of their relationships with others. And they begin to realize, I'm not connecting the way I want to connect. I'm not finding the kind of meaning that I want in my relationships. And that begins the process of trying to break down these coping skills that I tell people that they no longer need.
Yes.
They can let them go now.
Mm. And it's difficult, surely, when we have a lot of people in our lives when we've had troubles and using these coping skills. And then we meet other people who have troubles and we're all trying to use these coping skills and we are all, I hate to use the word dysfunctional to a certain extent, but how can we really come together and have peaceful and loving relationships if we're all trying to work out our old stuff on each other, you know?
Well, it's the human condition.
Yes.
You know, I just say, when I go into my office, I take my therapy hat off.
Uh-huh.
And I become not this resident guru, but I just become a fellow traveler.
Yep.
And recognize that all of us are in the same boat.
Yep.
We all struggle. We have our problems. We have our difficulties. And we have our good qualities and our good traits.
Mm-hmm.
And by approaching it that way, I want people to see me as someone who will collaborate with them to build a bridge, to move to a place that's safer, that's calmer, that's more peaceful, and helps them become more authentic.
Yes. You give them a safe environment, and I think personally that's a wonderful characteristic for a therapist to have, is what did Freud call it? Transparency. You know, we all have stuff. We all come from the same place. And, you know, I'm not going to be this cold thing that you bounce off of and look as if I'm judging you or taking notes upon your behaviors. I'm there with you, man. I get it. Believe me.
Exactly.
Exactly. And that leads me to the next question. Don't you have people coming in to see you who say, you know, I didn't have that really bad of a childhood. I mean, I wasn't beaten. I mean, my mother was gone a lot, or she was kind of all about herself and always had body problems, somatic issues, and was always at the doctor. My dad was always gone, but I really never had a bad, abusive home life. I mean, don't we all, to a certain extent, have little issues, even if we haven't had traumatic childhoods?
Yes, but what I say to people is, I look at that, this is what happens.
Yeah.
The statements that you just said can be a minimization, a way of minimizing the significance of certain things that occurred.
Yeah. Yep.
And so generally people will say similar things. They'll say, well, you know, my childhood wasn't so bad because I didn't get beaten. Okay, so then I begin exploring with them over, let's say, a period of time, mm-hmm. weeks. And they have all of these symptoms, anxiousness, depression, frustration, obsessive compulsive behaviors. And I'm thinking, you know, what's going on here? They said they had a happy childhood.
Yeah.
And over the period of time, as they build trust with me, I call it the, oh, by the way. Generally, within the last 10 minutes of therapy, I get the, oh, by the way.
And that's the biggie.
The, oh, by the way, is they begin to tell me a nugget mm-hmm. about their childhood. I sit in my chair and I go, oh, my God.
Right.
I cannot believe I just heard that. And then they come back the next week and I get another, oh, my God.
Right.
I cannot believe this. And so generally what happens, a lot of people will tell you at the outset of therapy, everything was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 weeks down the line, I look at them, I say, you know, when we first met, you told me you had the most wonderful childhood. And you just told me a minute ago that your parents were hanging out with a felon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how do you reconcile that? She says, I can't. She says, I never fully got the fact that I was frightened because I knew this guy was a crook and my parents were hanging out with him.
Mm.
And I was worried about what was going to happen to my parents.
Wow.
This is what happens.
Wow.
And all that minimization breaks down and then the pain of what they experienced comes out.
Right.
Now, there are people who don't, you know, have minor things happen, but they're not the ones that are coming to therapy.
Right.
If it was really, really minor, they're not showing up at my door.
Right. That's right. There's something going on within them that they need to work out, that they've been suppressing. And you, thankfully, are there to help bring up these things and really recognize them, pull them up and deal with them, get through them, process them.
One of the key lines, I'm sorry.
No, no.
One of the key lines that people will say, you know, when they want to minimize, they'll say, you know, my dad had a horrible background.
Hmm.
And they'll spend 10 minutes talking to me about their father's horrible background.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, you know, I get that. It must have been really difficult for your father, but we're not here for your father.
Right.
We're here to deal with how your father's behavior impacted you.
Right.
So we need to change our perspective. And again, that's the minimization that people do in order to deflect pain.
It's really true. And speaking about reflecting on the father or the mother and their issues, they do need to come back to themselves. But isn't that part of, you know, in other words, understanding what mom and dad or whoever the caregivers were, went through and how they were ignorant of how to parent, isn't that part of the process of forgiveness? Because it's really important to heal from that painful past. You need to forgive.
Yeah.
So that is sort of part of the whole healing process, is to understand who they were and what they did and try to forgive them.
That's part of the equation. But here's the irony. Mm. People can't do that until they process. Mm. They can't. They try. Forgiveness for me is not just a single act.
Right.
It's a process of discovery of who you are and who, in this case, your parents are, and learning to let go of their power
mm-hmm.
over you in a sense. And so, actually, when people can emotionally flush out some of their anger and their bitterness and their hostility and whatever, disappointment,
mm-hmm.
they're in a better position to be able, to that point, forgive their parents, to let the past go.
Right.
That's my goal. It's not to be, it's really important that people understand this is not an indictment. My book is not an indictment of parents.
Right.
It's about what we experienced as children, how we perceived and how we experienced it, and trying to deal with our own wounding and find our own healing.
Right.
And it's not about placing blame. It's about taking ownership and responsibility as adults for things that happened during childhood that didn't go our way.
Right. Right. And also part of that forgiveness, the biggie is forgiving ourselves for having to walk on eggshells, for feeling depressed, for having to have no boundaries, for having anxiety. We need to forgive ourselves and love that which we are. That's a toughie.
You know, that's really, really good. I'm glad you brought that up because it really is. And sometimes that's the difficult part. That of it letting go, that people can't forgive themselves for where they were or how they saw things. And what I want to get people to do is, I mentioned the left hand, I want them to be able to identify with that clutter, and then I want them to be able to flush it out, and I want them to be able to release that.
Yes.
Then I want them to, so I want them to identify, then I want them to disidentify. By that I mean I want them to be able to look at the clutter as if it was 5 feet out in front of their vision.
Yes.
And I want them to be, as an observer, to look at it and to be able to detach themselves from it and begin to say, this is not me. This is a bunch of stuff that I accumulated and internalized during childhood. It's a bunch of feelings that I no longer need.
That's intense. It really is. It's a wonderful process. Along with the emotional pain, James, you talk about, storing pain in various parts of our bodies. And, hence the somatic disorders, right, that many of us have. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, I think what people do is they actually refer their pain to their body on some level because it's too painful to maintain it emotionally. So it gets stored. And it gets stored there, as through our childhood, a lot of the anger and rage and things get stored, psychically stored, as energy. And if we go to, for example, a massage therapist, mm-hmm. there are occasions when a massage therapist will work on our body and all of a sudden the tears will come from the clients. And I'll ask massage therapists when I go in and say, have you ever had that happen? They say, all the time.
Wow.
So what happens is when they're working on the person's body and they hit a certain trigger point or they hit something and all of a sudden the tears start to come. So there's emotional reaction to what's occurring into our bodies.
Right.
I see our bodies as a metaphor for things that are going on within our lives. For example, I'll have people who have gastrointestinal problems, mm-hmm. and I'll say to them, is it possible that maybe there's some things you just can't stomach?
Wow.
M. Scott Peck, who is a great, wrote The Road Less Traveled, probably one of the best known psychotherapy books of all time, wrote about how he used to have problems with his neck. And he went to a doctor and they finally did surgery on his neck. But he said he never really got full control over his pain until he learned how to stick his neck out.
Wow.
He said, so he made a connection metaphorically between his neck pain and his inability to assert himself. He said, once I did the assertiveness and learned how to be assertive, my neck pain diminished significantly.
Wow.
So these problems that we have in our body, this stored energy, it becomes a metaphor for ways in which we play out our life.
Yes. And sometimes when we say metaphors or we hear them, we think, oh, that's corny. But it's real. Sit on a rock.
Yes.
I'm tight, uptight. Stick your neck out. That is significant. And I think that's an eye-opener for a lot of people. really might affect the pharmaceutical companies if they knew this, right?
Exactly. But, you know, we hold our bodies tightly together.
Yes.
And I'll tell people sometimes it's as if you're like a ball of yarn, and if I were to remove one strand from that ball of yarn, you believe that the whole ball will unravel.
Right.
And you'll just collapse. And so we hold ourselves together in certain, even posturally, I can see it in people, or their arm movements or the way they hold their arms, in a tense, tight, clinging manner.
Yeah.
And, you know, and is it any wonder? Because then you have not only the physical manifestations of it, but you then have to work on the emotional manifestations of that pain.
What percent of physical problems would you attribute to mental issues, unresolved mental problems from early childhood?
Wow, that's a good question.
Thanks.
Didn't
mean to put you on the spot.
I'm gonna say it, and I'm gonna look at this in a different way.
Okay.
I'm gonna say we need to distinguish those things that definitely we can make a somatic connection, psychosomatic connection with. You know, I'm sure some people would say, well, there are other organic diseases that may have psychological associations to them. It's hard for me to answer that question. I sometimes get concerned that we go too far in a holistic manner, and we believe that all diseases or all manifestations of organic diseases have an emotional foundation.
Right.
I'm not willing to go that far.
Sure.
But I'm willing to say that many, many of the somatic problems that we have, cardiovascular issues, stomach problems, postural problems.
Right. Muscle tensions.
Those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you can't pluck an organ out and solve that.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, yes, go ahead. I'm sorry, James.
And even back problems. Certain types of back problems, I think, are manifestations of anxiety and stress. Mm. So I don't know about a percentage, but I know that there's a high degree of emotional, that a lot of times when people are going to doctors, there's an emotional component to it.
Right. And more medical doctors are opening up to referring people to therapists like ourselves to get help, work on the physical and the psychological. So that's a good thing. And of course,
let me clarify this, because I think I get referrals from pain management doctors,
right?
Because I deal with people that have extreme pain. And I think I'm able to offer them coping strategies, ways in which they can deal with their pain, and I'm actually able to help people minimize their pain.
Mm-hmm.
So if they tell me they're an 8 when they come in, I had a client the other day who said he was more at a 5 or a 6, and it was all based on working with him on coping strategies and actually some childhood issues.
Mm-hmm.
I have a doctor in this area who's a specialist in tinnitus and inner ear disorders.
Right.
He refers patients to me, and I found some ways that I was able to help people with that kind of problem, inner ear dysfunctions.
Yes.
To actually reduce some of that disturbance that they were experiencing.
Wow.
So it's not that I'm saying I can organically remove happening, but I can minimize it through certain strategies and techniques.
Sure. There's always the inheritance, the DNA component that we get from our biological parents, but also there's the mind-body connection where in some way we can relax and manage pain and muscle tension and stressors and depression. That's what therapy's about, I guess. And you do specialize as well in pain management, so that it really is something to think about for listeners out there who are experiencing certain things and they just can't quite get a handle on it with the medical aspect.
That's a good point, because it takes a multidisciplinary approach to deal with a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if the listeners have gone to doctors and, you know, they've just dealt with the physical basis of it, and you're not seeing results, it would be advisable to seek some kind of therapy or counseling or some other modality to try to make some inroads in terms of getting your body relaxed, trying to relax the sympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm. And I really also recommend hypnosis, not to go off here,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, get in that alpha state of mind where you can be open to suggestions to help yourself as well. I really believe that that is really helpful in giving people therapeutic pain management and, you know, stress, other issues like that. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest today is James Krehbiel. He's the author of his latest book. It's called Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth. And it's a wonderful book. What can I say? It's one of the finest, clearly laid out books to help you work through a lot of your childhood trauma. And again, as James has been explaining, you don't have to be horribly abused to have scars from your childhood. Some have been better than others. But this is for the folks who might think, gee, I'm having troubled relationships always. I'm having problems in the workplace. I don't have a lot of friends. I'm depressed. I'm anxious. Maybe I should go to therapy. Yep, something's going on. So this is what that book's about. And we're coming sort of to the end of the show here, but I want to ask you, James, what does a triumphant life look like?
Yes.
The biggie.
That's a good question. Look, I think people, when they begin to feel that they've worked through a process of moving through a lot of the difficulties of childhood, they feel empowered, they develop new, mature relationships, they begin to assert themselves, and they set better boundaries, they can express feelings in a more appropriate manner. They can, like you mentioned earlier, they can forgive themselves, they can forgive others.
Mm-hmm.
They can parent more effectively, and that's one of the reasons why I put a chapter in my book called The Art of Parenting, because I think it's really important.
Yes.
Communicating more intimately, trusting life, feeling more comfortable with one's aloneness, and most importantly, I guess, it's just living in the present, living in the moment, and not anticipating the past or the future.
Yes. Yes. How can people get a hold of you and or get your book?
Oh, that's a good question. My book can be, first of all, people can go to scottsdaletherapy.net. That's real easy, and that's where my website is, and it'll tell you everything you want to know about me. And there's some issues, stuff on there about my books. I have another book I wrote called Stepping Out of the Bubble, Reflections on the Pilgrimage of Counseling Therapy. And you can go to Amazon.com. It's probably the easiest way to get a copy of my book, or Barnes & Noble's. Or if you contact me directly, and my email address is on my website, I'll be happy to send you a complimentary copy.
Super. That is great. So, by the way, James, all this information will be up in the archives tomorrow. If you missed any of this show, listeners, you can download it, play it back, and get all the information you need to contact James or get a hold of his books. I encourage you to do so, because it really is a great read, and it will help you out, folks, if you have any lingering issues or problems you think you may have from your childhood. One of the best, most recent books that I've read. So, James Krehbiel, thank you so much for being a great guest on the show. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Great work, and keep up the good work. I'm looking forward to your next book.
Great.
All right.
Take care.
All righty now. Bye-bye. All right, again, that's James Krehbiel, the special author of the latest book, Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from Battle Scars of Youth. And, you know, it'll help you get going on a lot of your issues. And this, you know, I always recommend good books that you might want to look into in order to cope with problems. You say, hey, maybe I need some therapy. Read the book, go to therapy, do it all. It's always a good thing to do. All right. Yeah, it's about that time we move on. You've been on the couch with Dr. Michelle. I thank you so much. Always, you can contact me right here on the website at LA Doc Talk Radio, DocMichelle@AOL.com. That's where to find me. Check out my website as well, which you can link onto, or the Facebook. We're all here. And my body language video has gone viral. So if you want to go to ehow.com and search for understanding body language, it'll help you out a lot. Have a good day. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first. And then you'll be great for others. That's the way it works. Be back next Friday with Greg Sane. We'll find out why all men are dogs.